Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hello, this is motivational speaker Les Brown, and you're listening to Life Conversations. It's going to change your life.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations, the radio show, is dedicated to empowering its listeners spiritually, emotionally, socially, and financially. The radio show provides the platform for the stimulation of thoughts, conversations, and ways of being that allow listeners to explore and examine what it is they believe and decide whether what they believe is keeping them stuck and disempowered or empowering them to live their best life.
Hey folks, it's Jenny Cressman. I've worked in the field of woman abuse for almost 20 years now, and I have a challenge for you. I want to challenge you to help end violence against women. Now, that may seem like a big, hairy, scary project, but if we all work together, anything's possible. All I want you to do is talk about it. That's my challenge. Whenever appropriate and safe, tell people that abuse of any kind is absolutely unacceptable. If someone says it's a woman's fault she was abused, or tells a joke that puts women down, call them on it. Stand up, speak out, and stop abuse and violence against women. Just saying that's not right is a big step towards greater equality. You can make a difference. You can help make the world a better place. Just talk about it.
Take a little shortbread, budgie nut bar. How many cheeks? Snickerdoodle shortbread, budgie nut bar. How many cheeks in the cookie jar? One.
Dad, you're supposed to jump over the rope.
One more time.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Life Conversations Radio Network is expanding to become a global media for spiritual growth and transformation, and we want your support. Help us take it to the next level. If you listen to 1 minute, 5 minutes, or weekly to Life Conversations Radio Network, you are renewed, restored, and rejuvenated with guests who will inspire you to love and honor you. By funding this project, you are investing in yourself and humanity. We even have wonderful rewards when you contribute. Go to pleasefund.com/pages/347 for more detail. That's pleasefund.com/pages/347. We are one. It's time to share the message.
Life Conversations, committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be. Have courage. Make that move.
Hi, this is Jack Armstrong, author of Lessons from the Source. You're listening to Ask Life Coach Ade on LifeConversationsRadio.com. Many blessings to you.
I am great. I am wonderful. I am whole. I am peace. I am here. I am strong. I'm free. Well, I'm the delight of God. I am you. I am healed. I am love. I am great. I am wonderful. I am whole. And I am free.
Return to me. Return to me. With every breath, return. In. Be
I return to the truth of who I am. I return to love. When I return to love, I remember that I am love, and I'm able to share that love. It's not even an obligation anymore. Once we identify, once we recognize, once we realize who we are, we automatically, by default, it becomes our new set point to just radiate that love without even trying. Return to me. Return to you. Where have you neglected yourself? Where have you ignored yourself? What do you really want? Are you listening to yourself? The prayer, the call, the request from the universe, from the source, from the divine consciousness is to return to me. Return to life. Return to love. It is all the same. It's one and the same. Life is good. It's getting better. And I am so grateful to be part of this thing called life. I'm so grateful to have you here. And with that, I say good afternoon, good evening, good night, good morning, good day to you, wherever you may be at this very moment in time. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in to Life Conversations Radio. When change begins and you make a difference, you make a difference because you exist. You make a difference because you're alive. You made a difference when you were conceived. Doesn't matter if it was an accident or oops, I didn't know this was going to happen, but you made a difference and you're still making a difference, and you can now just set an intention, make a choice to make a powerful difference. How powerful? You get to decide. You get to express the difference. You get to name it what you want, because there is that power within you that says, yes, be still and know that I am God and I am one with you. You are one with me and we are one. Thank you, thank you, thank you, all of you, for tuning in. You are listening to the Ask Life Coach at a radio show. And we are here Monday to Thursday, 12 p.m. What is it? I don't know. We're here because we're always here or everywhere evilly present. We're here 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern. That's it. I got it. I remember now. 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern. All the shows are archived, and you can download any show that you missed. You can go to you can subscribe to iTunes, subscribe into Life Conversations, and you can download the shows and listen again, listen back. You know, some serious soul food that we serve up in this joint. We serve up some soul food, food for your soul, food for your transformation, food for your remembrance. So everything that you hear through the guest, through the host, is just to remind you who you are. We are all on this journey together, and sometimes we're out of balance, sometimes we're in balance, sometimes we're full grounded, and sometimes we don't even know if we're coming or going, if we're out of alignment, and then sometimes we judge ourselves. But this month, September, we're focusing, our theme is balance and groundedness. We're going to support you to find your balance, even while you're out of balance. To help you find that, to feel grounded even while you're feeling uprooted. Because the truth is, there is no spot where God is not. So really, sometimes when you feel out of balance, it could actually be a growth happening. But your mind doesn't understand it, it's not used to it. You say, oh, I'm out of balance. But maybe there's a transformation going, just maybe. So we create a space for you to embrace the now, love the self, love the moment. And then sometimes, we know some things are harder to love. Some things are harder to love, but some folks are harder to love. But you bring yourself back into balance. You ground yourself by recognizing whatever thought I'm thinking about the other, I'm thinking it about myself. As a matter of fact, I am the generator of the thoughts. So as I generate that thought, I become in alignment to the thought that I'm sending out. So because I am the vibration now, because of the thought I'm thinking, I'm going to attract more of that. So when you're sending out a thought that is not in alignment with the truth of who you are, you get your past yourself. Do I want to manifest this experience? And when you're sending out a thought that is in alignment with the truth of who you are, you can just breathe in and trust and hold that thought and hold that thought. And then if it disappears, then it disappears. It's like, okay, I'm always one with the one. I'm so grateful to be here. Welcome back for those of you in America who had a labor-free day. That's what I call it, Labor Day, labor-free day, because those who didn't go to work, that means you weren't at work. So you weren't working. So it was a labor-free. But also, when you think of the word labor, when a woman is in labor, sometimes there's pain, there's contraction. And that's part of life. But we're moving to a place where we can also have a labor-free, painful experience. And my female listeners said, yeah, spoken like a true man. I don't care what you say. I know what I'm saying. Trust me. I'll give a birth. Not to a human baby, but some ideas have been broken down. I've had to push through experiences. You are listening to the Ask Life Coach at a radio show, and I welcome all of you in the chat room. Cheryl is in the house. 17 child is in the house. Teresa is in the house. Yvette is in the house. Welcome, welcome. Silent listeners, disguised guests. Those of you on the phone line, thank you for listening. Kenny is in the house. He's already created a sacred space, so I'm just surrendering to the space that was created a long time ago before I met Kenny, before he even thought of Life Conversations Radio. So we're just experiencing a divine appointment together. Celeste's in the house. Tam Tam is in the house. Other folks are on the phone line. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm so ready, almost ready to jump into this conversation. We want to have a conversation with Kenny Johnson. Kenny has a story that most of us will probably frown upon, judge, criticize. But you know what? Each and every one of us have been pinked and we've pinked others. Some of us under the guise of spirituality. We're still getting our hustle on. Well, I'm spiritual.
I'm meditating all the time, so I'm going to just create my reality and flip them out of my life. We all have a way of hustling. But my brother, Kenny Johnson, is here today to share his story, his experience of being in jail over 30 times, and just reading his book, some of it was just too much for me. It's like, oh, my God. But it's reality. It's what we're going through when we take on this physical body. And then moving on to his transformation, his awakening. He found freedom when he realized the real prison is the prison of the mind. And the freedom you seek is the one you are. So when you recognize who you are, you're living in freedom. And so much to talk about, so much to talk about. What else do I want to tell you? Tomorrow we have Vanda Guzman joining us. We're having a conversation about life, as we always do, because life is beautiful. And, this is a short week, isn't it, for me anyway. So it could be a short week for anybody. And then Thursday, I'm going solo. Monday we have Bishop Carlton Pearson coming back to join us. We got a lot going on, so just keep listening. Don't go a day without Life Coach a day. Because you can't lose with the stuff he uses. All right, okay. So anyway, we're taking your call 347-426-3346. 347-426-3346. Make sure you press 1 on your keypad. And we'll come to you with your questions, your thoughts, your comments, your experience. You can even bring your doubts, your worries, your fears. This is the house of love. So whatever you bring to this house of love, we're going to support you in lifting it up. By the time you finish having a conversation with us, you just feel yourself going, I feel better now. That's the intention. If you don't want to call in and you don't want your family members to hear your voice because you're listening on the download, you can go to Ask Life Coach Ade Radio Show. Ask Life Coach Ade Radio Show fan page, or just type Ask Life Coach Ade. I think each Facebook will tell you what it is, but you'll find it. Ask Life Coach Ade fan page, like page, and post your questions on there and we'll get to it. And if you don't do Facebook, don't want the world to know about your secret, and you can't post it on Facebook or can't get on your blogs, whatever the case may be, we invite you to go to lifeconversationsmedia.com, lifeconversationsmedia.com, and click on the Life Conversations Radio menu. Excuse me. Life Conversations menu, and then there's a drop menu that says, what does it say again? That's right. Ask Life Coach Ade, and fill in the email, and we'll be happy to share your questions, your thoughts with Kenny. Yeah, Kenneth Dale Johnson. I've been doing my research. So I'm going to read a little bit about Kenny, and I'm going to bring him on. Actually, before I do that, let's do this real quick. Let's do this. We need to do this because I played at the beginning of the show, Return to Me, which is the Agape Choir, and it's simply a prayer of returning to oneself. And to find out more about the Agape Choir, you can go to their website. It is agapelive.com, agapelive.com, the home of Michael Bernard Beckwith. And when you return to the source, to God, to truth, to love, to the grace that is upon you, that is you, when goodness and mercy is tracking you down, you get to experience something in a whole new way. It's called peace of mind. We're going to take a quick music break, just a couple of minutes, and we'll be back with Kenny Johnson. Om Shanti, with Tobias Beckwith. We'll be right back.
Yes, indeed. Ricky Byers Beckwith. Yeah. I keep telling you, my singing voice was out on a gig last night. But my other voice is trying to step in, so I just have to wait because I don't want it to step in right now. I don't want to ruffle your peaceful state of mind. Om Shanti, Ricky Byers Beckwith, WeLetItBe.com. WeLetItBe.com. Kenny's in the house. Kenny Johnson. And also want to remind you, 1 o'clock around 1 is Celestial Moment with Celeste Morgan. So stay tuned for that. Let me read a little bit about Kenny Johnson. Hold on, I think I want to have a device underneath me. Oh, stop it. Yes, playing underneath me. How about that? All right, let's go here. Kenny Johnson is the founder and director of This Sacred Space, a nonprofit organization that facilitates meditation and emotional healing for men and women behind bars and after their release. Kenny is the author of The Last Prophet, A True Story, which chronicles 31 years of criminal activity. He spent much of his life in prison or on the run. Eventually, his desire for lasting freedom would drive him to find a power that could not only get him through his final sentence, but free him from prison forever. Not just the prison, not the walls, but the prison of the mind. Ah, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, psychics and skeptics, physical beings and non-physical beings, help me welcome my guest, my brother, myself, brother Kenny Johnson. Hey. Hello, Kenneth, how are you doing?
Hey, in the house.
Everybody's waiting. They're just excited to hear you being here. They can't even control themselves. I'm going to be quiet now.
Oh, gosh. This is beautiful. It really is.
Thank you so much. You're welcome. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing your story of life. The good, the bad, the ugly, and the I can't even talk about it. Thank you for sharing it all.
I was scared to death to release the book. I really was. It was to share so much intimate information, you know,
yes,
with the world,
yes,
and realize you can't take it back, you know, once you do it, it's out there. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And you know, reading your book, what you shared is very, very personal, very real. And when we are able to, sometimes I think we surrender to that fear. We sometimes surrender. Sometimes we're fearful while we're doing it because something within is saying this is the next thing to do. But the gift of that, one of the gifts is that our life, in this case, your life, becomes a blessing unto somebody else. So, you know, it's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
But before
we talk
about your story, your experience, I want to ask you this question. You know, I read a little bit about you. I said, you know, you're the author of The Last Hustle, A True Story.
Mm-hmm.
And but I want to ask you from your point of view, from your perspective, who are you? Who is Kenny Johnson?
That's a good one. After careful consideration, and this morning I woke up, I was lying in bed, and I became aware of who I was. I was lazy. I said, I'm free. I'm 64 years old. I'm a man. Then I had to stop, connect with my breath, and I realized that I was divinely connected to this energy source, this present that is here. And that has no name. I mean, it has no, I mean, I was divinely connected to something greater than just this body, this mind, this story of Kenny Johnson. And that I cannot describe. I don't know where it is. I don't know how it is. All I know is that I know that it is, and I am connected to that what is. That's the best way I can say it right now.
I understand. The something that is no thing, that is everywhere evenly present and living
That's
its
right.
life as us, that
That's
transcends
right.
label and names and definitions.
That's right.
And speaking of waking up this morning, today's your birthday, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Happy birthday to you, my brother. Happy birthday.
Yes.
Thank you for showing up on this planet and keep teaching in many ways.
Thank you.
So speaking of birthdays, let's go back a little bit in your story. Let's go back to Peaches and Sweets. When life was starting and you were living with Grandma. Tell us about your story.
Oh, God. I know the happiest time of my life was when I was a young kid living in Arkansas with my grandmother and my mother for a moment, and my brothers and sisters for a moment, and my cousin for a moment. I remember those times. But that was the happiest time because I could get up in the morning, run out into the country, into the fields, out by the pond, into the woods, and be totally free. That was the freest time of my life. I would go out into the woods, and I would lay down, and I would look up into the trees. And I, as a young kid one time, I was laying there. I never shared this with anybody. I'm sharing it now. I don't know why I'm sharing it. But I was laying in the woods, and it seemed like a ladder came out of heaven, and I was able to climb that ladder. And I think that was my first spiritual experience, a mystical experience with something.
Mm.
You know, because young children, they have these experiences all the time.
Right.
Because they're so innocent, and because it says in the Bible, you know, except you become a child, you cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as a child, I was just happy to be alive, happy to be able to run free. And those years with Grandma were so, so precious to me. And I love my grandmother. She loved me. And I understand the grandmother and grandson dynamic because she just gave me everything I wanted and all the love I could not get from the world after that. That love of Grandma carried me through. Because once I got about 8 or 9 years old, then the love became fear, terror, and I had to learn how to survive in a world that wasn't, from my vantage point as a young man, young child, wasn't loving anymore. So Grandma gave me the love I needed to get me through. We're just talking here, so I'm just saying what's coming up in my heart right now.
Now, I hear you, and that's what this show is about. It's because, you know, we live in a society where our education system, our society teaches us to, you know, not as a judgment, but to rely more on the intellect. But when
right.
we start walking this spiritual path, when we start
right.
moving into a new space, we start to realize it's important to incorporate in our heart into our lives. And, and when we share from their hearts, that's where shifts happen. That's where real transformation happens. You know,
that's
you talked about in your book, The Last Hustle, you talked about how, you know, things that impress you, Peaches and is the other girl called Sweets, and, you know, what made you, you know, you wanted to impress them, you took money out of your grandmother's purse and went to buy candy. And then you moved on to your first crime. Let's talk about the first crime, well, the first real crime, the joyriding. It's funny. I've always heard joyride or someone was arrested for joyriding, but I never really thought about it. But just like joyriding, I knew what it meant. But when I was reading your book, it occurred to me, it's like, it's funny that we call it joyride and we punish people for joyriding. It's oxymoronic. You know, it should be called something else. If they're in a joyride, we should celebrate them. Oh, it's not silly people's car, but you know, I said joyride and interest. But let's talk about the joyriding experience.
I like that. Okay, go ahead.
So, you decide to go on a joyride, and that was the beginning of nightmare for years to come. Tell us about that experience. What was it? What caused you to actually move down that path?
What happened was, you know, when I came out of the neighborhood, I came out of the house and started hanging out with young men. You know, I wanted to belong to something. I wanted to belong. I wanted people to accept me. You know, and these friends I accepted, they were like, we would hang out at night. And one guy said, hey, man, let's take this car. Let's steal this car. Let's ride. And so I said, okay. So he showed me how. So he showed us how to take some chewing gum, you know, paper, and pull a wire out from the ignition, find the two wires, wrap it up, you know, with this chewing gum, and boom, the car start up. And so I said, wow. So I went and got me a car, and I jumped in and did the same thing. And I have never in my life, Celeste, knew how to drive. I didn't know how to drive a car. And so I just got behind it, and I put the gas to the pedal to the metal, they say, and was driving this car 80 and 90 miles down the street. I tore up cars, wrecked the car, jumped out and ran down the street and kept doing that because it was so fun. Day in and day out, I kept doing it. The one time I got caught, I don't know how I got caught, but I got caught for joyriding, and it took me to jail. And that was my first, arrest was for stealing a car. And also, I was placed on probation. I was maybe about 13 or 14 years old of age when this happened. And that's, so I became a juvenile delinquent at an early on age. And it was just going to have some fun. Just doing what young kids do back then. I just wanted to have fun and just doing what young kids did those days.
Right.
You know, we don't understand insurance. We don't understand collateral damage. We don't understand pain and suffering that the people are going to experience when they come out the next morning and find their car's wrecked, their car gone. That didn't even enter our young minds. But now it does because after having what I recall, like I was having the awakening, waking up out of that ignorance, that non-caring phase, I became caring. And realize that I can't do that. I can't do those things. And those people around me, they're causing pain and suffering. I want them to become conscious of what they're doing so they can wake up out of that mindset or that state of mind also, so they can become more compassionate and loving to themselves and to their fellow man.
Right. Now, we've talked about the catalyst for a life of crime, but let's go back to the beginning.
Okay.
You know, because when people end up in prison, it's so easy to let it's the parents, it's the family, children have no love. Let's talk about your experience. You grew up with your grandmother, and in your book you talk about how you didn't even know why you were the only one living with your grandmother. And the experience that happened when you stole money out of her purse and she had to send you back to your mother. Why did you end up living with your grandmother?
Because my mother, she moved from Arkansas, Star City, Arkansas, to Kansas City, Missouri, to be with her sister and uncle her sister's husband at the time. And so, because she wanted to get out of Arkansas. Picking cotton every day to, you know, maybe find a better life up north. You know, in the south, you know, the north was the place to go because you're coming out of slavery. So she went north. When mama went north, you know, she went there and made a home. Then, but she left me down in Arkansas with grandma, and I was happy. I was thrilled to be able to have all the love to myself. So, so my mother went north, and she took my younger brother and my sister with her, and I stayed there with grandma.
Go ahead.
And then after about, I say, a year or so, I kept giving grandma headaches, and she sent me up north to be with mama.
Yeah, you took some greens and you had to fly out. Took some money out of her wallet, and she said that was it. What was that experience like being with your grandmother? You know you loved her. You know she loves you.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
You stole money from her, and she didn't. She just put you on a bus and sent you on a Greyhound to your mother. What was that experience like? How old were you then?
I would say about 7 or 8. Seven or eight.
So do you recall that experience when she put you on Greyhound bus and sent
you
to your mother?
Oh yes, I never forget that cold ride. Like, I mean, I kept sitting there. I was right up front by the bus driver, you know, and I'm like. Mm. I'm like watching this. I'm coming from Arkansas, where it's kind of warm, but still, it was definitely winter season. And I get to Kansas City, and it's blustery, cold, and snowy. I said, "Oh my God!" You know, so like it was sort of like an omen. Cause you go out by way to have a whole life, brother.
A whole different life.
A whole different life. Yeah.
And then you end up moving with your mother and siblings. And you said how many of you? You said 7, right?
Yes, it was 7. After it's all said and done, it was 7 of us. Our youngest one, he's dead, Robin. He died in 1992, but there was 7 of us all total. And I was the oldest.
The oldest. So as the oldest, a total of 7 brothers and sisters. And your mom, she was a single mother for a certain time, right?
My mom was, she had my stepfather, you know, he was a chef cook, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, only,
okay.
that was the only father I knew. And he had a lot of problems. You know, he was an alcoholic and, you know, he tried to take care of 7 kids. He loved my mother and they fought. You know, back then it was just, you know, domestic abuse wasn't domestic abuse. He got angry. He beat my mother up. And I, as a young man, I hated that. And then mom would get angry at us and beat us up. You know, I mean, it's not so like, it was natural. It's like, wait a minute. It was natural at that time to experience a lot of violence because you saw it everywhere in the neighborhood that you were raised in.
Right.
You know,
right.
I remember this, Celeste. I was about 11 or 12 years old, and we were living on 706 Olive in Kansas City, Missouri, and I remember being woken up in the middle of the night, you know, from sirens and commotion, and like we all stumbled out of our house, you know, because we saw all this commotion, and right down the street, two doors down, a young woman had been shotgunned to death because her lover had got out of prison. And something fell, and finally she was with another man and killed her. And she was the nicest, most beautiful woman in the world. And this was like natural. This type of violence, men against women, and our neighborhood was like a natural way of being. So we had I was raised in a very violent neighborhood or lifestyle or community.
So it was a way of life. Before we go on, Celeste is my co-producer. I am life coach at A. I think I heard you call me Celeste twice. No, Celeste is a co-producer. And I'm
talking
to you. You're talking to life coach at A.
Oh, gosh. I'm looking here. Okay. Oh, my God. Sorry.
No problem. First time I said, did he call me Celeste? And second time I'm like, yep, he definitely called me Celeste. Nah. I'm not Celeste. Celeste is the one you've been talking to. She's the co-producer. So, yeah, you've been talking to her more. So, yeah, this is our first time meeting. So, I understand.
Okay.
I understand.
You have a generic voice. I want you to know that.
My voice is genderless. My voice is genderless. Okay. I take that as a compliment.
Please,
it's
very genderless.
Yeah, okay. That means I balance. Yeah, I'm one with my feminine side and my masculine side. Yeah, that's a compliment. That's a compliment.
I love it.
So, I want to take a break in a minute, but before we take a break, you talked about how, you know, you lived in a culture where there's violence. You know, you talked about your stepfather, Bob Scott, was an alcoholic, and
you just
saw violence everywhere.
How much
did you think that played a role in how your life turned out as an adult when you were in and out of prison?
Yeah, well, it's almost as you know, for as science of mind teaches that whatever you think about, whatever you look at, whatever you meditate on, whatever you see, you experience, that becomes your life. Your life experiences.
Right.
And so that's what I saw. That's what I was raised in. I wasn't raised in a doctor's environment. I wasn't raised in a lawyer type environment. I wasn't raised in a let's go to college environment. I wasn't raised in that type of environment. I was raised in an environment where men abuse women and women abuse children and cats would abuse dogs and dogs abuse. You know, everybody was abusing somebody. So it would make sense that I would come out an abuser in some kind of way, and I abused myself by becoming a criminal and going to prison over and over again. That was my way of abusing myself. It had to happen. I mean, it was almost had to happen. As the only one trying to find the world, trying to experience the world, what do you do? You take what knowledge you have and go out and say, here I am, world. I'm going to project it onto you, and whenever I project it onto it, it came back to me.
That's the law of the universe. If you're just joining us, my guest is Kenny Johnson. He's the author of The Last Hustle, A True Story. To find out more about him, his website address is thissacredspace.org. Kenny, let's talk about the first time when you actually went to prison. Well, actually, before you even go to the prison, the how the whole thing about stealing and pimping writing bad checks and then end up getting 40 years for writing bad checks. Tell us, how did that all come about? And you know, just tell us about that story.
Well, when I started coming out and I was trying to make a living, trying to survive, I was about 15 or 14 years old, and I realized I had to be able to figure out some kind of way to make my own money to take care of myself. And cutting grass and all those, selling newspapers and trying to work for different people, all those things fizzled out. And I, again, looked around in my neighborhood and started looking for young men or young women that were doing something, because you always look to your peers. And my peers were sneak thieves, were hustlers. And I approached one. I said, hey, man, I want to learn how to make some money. I see you dressed well, you're looking well. Because poor ex-sheriff croppers from Arkansas living in Kansas City, Missouri, in a middle-class neighborhood where most of the middle-class teenagers had parents that had good jobs at the car factories or whatever, at the sawmills or whatever, and they were able to pay for their children's clothing and schooling. And my mother wasn't able to do that, so I had to figure out, my mama can't do it, my grandpa, my stepfather can't do it, I got to figure this out. I want to look nice. I want to dress nice. Here we go again. I want to look nice. I want to dress nice. And sure enough, I started stealing clothing just to dress up, to put on my back, because I didn't have any clothing. I became so susceptible to stealing clothing, hats, shoes, the cashmere coats and the wool coats and the cashmere sweaters and I said, oh, man, this is good. And the Santa belts, slacks. So I said, oh, I'm going to keep doing this. And one thing led to another. It became a way of life for me. And I was so successful at it. I said, why would I want to stop doing this when I can go out and steal something in a matter of hours and I'm good for the day? So it was just a natural outcome of the poverty of the class struggle that exists in the African-American community at that time and still exists. Yes, I had to figure out how a way to take care of myself. So this is a class struggle, as you know. There's 1%ers and 50%ers and the no percenters. and I was in that Canada and looked, so I figured out how I'd take care of myself, and that's what I did. And what happened? Go ahead.
No, finish it. What you think?
And what happened is that that led me to the revolving door of going in and out of prison for the next 30 years almost. From the age of 14 to the age of 44, that became the revolving door.
Wow. Wow. So that desire to break out of poverty, and then growing up in a community where there was domestic abuse, there was hitting, there was violence, there's shooting, there's killing, that's all you knew to get yourself out. I know there's a part in your book when your mother received the check for $10,000 and you moved to a different neighborhood, you wanted to dress like the rich kids, and you focus on their outfit. But it's because most of what you had or what you grew up with was violence. That was the only way you knew to get what you wanted. Is that
right,
how you saw it?
Right. Yes.
So what was the first realization? What did you realize the first time you ended up in prison? When you got in prison, you got locked up. What was that like for you?
Wow, the first time I'm tripping, man, how can I say it? In prison, I was in reformatory. The first time I was in a real prison was in reformatory in Kansas, Hutchinson, Kansas. And again, it was cold steel, cold concrete, cold bars, lying in a cell by myself, going through an orientation induction where they, a quarantine, where you're there for, you get, shots, immunized against all types of disease and everything, and get classified. And I remember laying there, and we had a radio program we could listen to from inside the jail. They had a prison radio station. And so I was laying there, and I put my headphones on. I was laying in my bunk. It was cold. I got my blanket, my wool blanket. And I turned on the radio station, and I heard Aretha Franklin, saying, "Do right, woman, do right, man," And that was like, I'm a fan. I listened to her. And Aretha Franklin was probably something that could warm me or keep me warm, or I could just, listen to and find some connection because of her soul for singing and that was what kept me connected to the outside world was it, because the outside world was through her song and through the radio. Because in prison, you want to stay connected to the outside world because you realize that this world that you're in is not real. It's not real, but so you want to say, how can I maintain some type of connection to the outside world? Just know that it exists and you exist. Because after a while, your mind turns away from the outside world, and then you become totally involved in the prison world. And I instinctively knew that I didn't want to become totally involved with the prison world, but I couldn't help it because I had to bring all of my awareness to the prison world in order to survive the prison world, to know all the players, the key players in prison. So I had to learn how to really bring all my attention there and become a convict. And that was, my God. Once you become a convict, the outside world really doesn't exist. It's just a thought, but it's not the real world. The real world is in prison. How to survive. How to watch out from this con, how to watch out from this guard, how to get feed yourself, how to negotiate in this world of men who are angry, who are pissed off, and who are out for themselves. It's like a jungle. A real jungle where the laws are your laws. Then you realize that the prison system has a law, and the prisoners have a law, and you better come up with your law quick.
so you can survive.
Mm-hmm.
there is a part in your book, and you talked about when you walked in one of the prison, in the I think you call it the reception area, and there was blood in the reception area.
Right.
And at first, as I was reading, I'm thinking, okay, maybe you're going to reveal that it wasn't blood, it just looked like blood, or that you were hallucinating. But as I kept reading, you were for real, that it was blood in just the reception area. You haven't even made it into what they call, what is it called, program or the general
population? General population.
General population. And I could imagine that, walking somewhere and there's blood in the reception area. I read it, but it's like, how do you survive that kind of treatment? I guess that's what you're saying about coming up with your own rules and your own laws. And, you know, in your book, you detail, and we won't be able to go through most of it, but I really want to talk about, when you think about crime, when you think of being a pimp, you know, people could create their own image, or they can pick up your book to find out your particular story. But the thing that you said is, when you were in there, there was something about you didn't want to be, in your book you talk about it, about not wanting to come back to jail, and that was going to be it. You talked about your quest to know something deeper, your prayer and saying, God, if you get me out of this, I'll never be back here again. But something, every time you got back out, it's like you couldn't wait to be back inside the prison system. What do you think was going on in your mind then that was bringing you back to a place that you couldn't stand, that you just know it was dehumanizing you?
What happens is this. Once you're able to go to prison and you're able to do the whole round, the whole loop, you know, you're able to go in, survive, and come back out. Then what happens to you, you say, okay, I can survive prison, so prison is no longer a big phobia or fear for me. And so once I knew I could go into prison and I could make my own rules and every other convict establish my rules, and I knew I could survive, no problem. So now my next thing is, how can I get paid? How can I make money out of here? I would go out and do whatever I wanted to, because I realized I was a law unto myself. In other words, I was a total law unto myself in prison and out of prison. And so I was no longer afraid of prison, and that's what happened. When men and women start going to jail and they realize they can survive it on whatever level they call survival, you know what I'm saying? My survival is that I wasn't going to get punked out, I wasn't going to get embezzled, I wasn't going to get, you know, beat up and whatever other things that happened to people. I knew that wasn't going to happen to me. I was cool because I was on the upper echelon of the food chain. I'm hanging out with the killer sharks, the Makos, the lions, the tigers, the panthers. I'm hanging out with those cats. So I ain't worried about, I'm not on the lower end where I'm washing somebody's dirty underwear, or, you know, I'm performing sexual favors against my will. I'm not doing any of that. So once I knew I could survive that and I didn't have to live like that, I can't wait to get to the streets. Because this time I'm going to really do it up. I'm going to really do it up right, I thought.
Right.
So that mindset got locked in. You see what I'm saying? Now here we go back to the teachings. I had created a story, an image of myself that I can survive prison, I can do anything to the world. So now the world has to reflect that back to me and say, yes, you can, so do whatever you want to do. So that was my world. If you go back to the teachings.
Right. Wow. So the prison system became home away from home.
That's right.
Someone in the chat room said a woman in her neighborhood got 25 years for writing checks. And she has 6 children that go through, that she's got to get through high school, and she has a house, and she's got to be in prison. And she's I think it's Efwa in the chat room. She said, and there's some people get 10 years for murder. You got 4 years for writing checks. We're going to take a break because we're getting ready for Celestial Moment. When we come back, I want to talk about that 40-year sentence. That really was part of your transformation. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about Pops, because I know met a lot of teachers, people who guided your back, Israel, everybody supporting you, and Gino just helping you to get to where you are today. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we want to talk about the 40-year sentence and the influence that Pops and Ganga G had on you.
Okay.
And, so stay tuned. We'll be back. We're going to take a break. Yes. You are listening to the Ask Life Coach Ade radio show. My guest is Kenny Johnston, the author of The Last Hustle. The book is so riveting. I mean, it will grab you. Some of it, sometimes I can even stomach. I mean, I may have a genderless voice, but my stomach gets weak sometimes. I was like, oh, my God, and just how Kenny described the experience that he went through, and we won't be able to get into all of it, but I really want to sort of highlight his story and the transformation of meeting Ganga G and other teachers and his meditation, and even how he started doing astral projected and using that to spy on his woman. Kenny is something else. Kenny learned about spiritual practice, and he was still getting his hustle on. It's all going to make sense when we come back. The number is 347-426-3346. 347-426-3346. We're taking your questions, your comments. Make sure you press one on your keypad, or you can post your question in the chat room. Well, don't post your question in the chat room. We'll take your comment in the chat room. I think there's a comment in the chat room as well. Let's see. Let me check my email here. Let's see. Teresa has a question for Kenny. So, okay, we'll deal with that when we come back. And you can also post your question on the Ask Life Coach Ade radio show fan page, Ask Life Coach fan page, like page on Facebook. Or you can go to lifeconversationsmedia.com, lifeconversationsmedia.com, and click on the Life Conversations Radio, and it will take you to a tab, Ask Life Coach Ade. Yes, I am here waiting to take your call, to receive you, your thoughts, your comments, your whatever you're going through, your fears, your doubts, your worries, 347-426-3346. And there was something I needed to tell you, and it came to me. I said, okay, I'll say that in a minute. Oh, that's what it is. Oh, yes, of course, you can leave that out. That's important. Make sure to share the show with your friends, your lovers, your haters, wherever they are, even if they're in prison, especially if they're in prison. If you can get through to them, send them a text. Oh, they don't have cell phone. Find a way. Maybe you can do what Kenny did. If you haven't read his book, it won't make sense. But you can astral project the thought to them and just go in there and say, listen to Life Conversations Radio. So they could be free. And we ask that you post the link on your social network, social media, to share the show. And we thank you for those who have done it already. We truly love and appreciate you. We are going to take a break. Yes, you can, Celeste. You can read it when you... I'm going to take a break now. And as I click all these tabs, I feel like there's so much going on. And I don't even want to do this. I just want to have a conversation with Kenny. Okay, so we're going to just take a break. And right now, we're going to take a break. That's what we're going to do. And then we're going to come back. We go come back with Celeste for a moment with Celeste Morgan, and you are listening to the Ask Life Coach Ade radio show, and all shows are archived. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jack Armstrong, author of Lessons from the Source. You're listening to Ask Life Coach Ade on LifeConversationsRadio.com. Many blessings to you.
Hello, this is motivational speaker Les Brown, and you're listening to Life Conversations. It's going to change your life.
Life Conversations, committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be. Have courage, make that move.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
The sound of children playing. Something about hearing children laughing and playing has a way of bringing us joy. When was the last time you played? No children, no work, just stopped and took the time to tap into your inner joy. You're never too old to play. Successful people value their playtime. That's why Divine Arts Productions presents PLAY. purposefully loving and appreciating you. A weekend specially designed with you in mind to help tap into the big kid inside. There'll be dancing, music, video games, pool parties, fireworks, and so much more. To register, go to iwillplay.org. That's iwillplay.org. Give yourself the gift of having fun. I will play, and I will see you there.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you don't need to talk to me about sex.
Maybe you do control what I'm exposed to.
But maybe not.
Maybe I hear about sex every day.
In the media? From my friends?
Maybe while you're not talking to me about sex, everyone else is.
So talk to me. Tell me to wait to have sex.
Because you can influence me.
For help starting the conversations, visit forparents.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and this station.
Life Conversations Radio Network is expanding to become a global media for spiritual growth and transformation, and we want your support. Help us take it to the next level. If you listen to 1 minute, 5 minutes, or weekly to Life Conversations Radio Network, you are renewed, restored, and rejuvenated with guests who will inspire you to love and honor you. By funding this project, you are investing in yourself and humanity. We even have wonderful rewards when you contribute. Go to pleasefund.com/pages/347 for more detail. That's pleasefund.com/pages/347. We are one. It's time to share the message.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting in the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations Radio.
Giving a voice back to the community. To the community. To the community. To the community.
Yes, indeed. We are giving a voice back to the community. You all have something to share. You have a gift. Express yourself. Kenny is sharing a story. Kenny Johnson is my guest. He's the author of The Last Hustle. We're going to hear about The Last Hustle. We have questions from Teresa in the chat room. It's a three-part question. But now it's time for Celestial Moment with Celeste Morgan. Hey, Celeste, how are you doing?
I am so happy. I feel like I'm on the stoop listening to the both of you. Hello, Kenny. Happy birthday. Hello, Kenny, I have a
and
gift
Kenny's,
for you.
Kenny's been wanting to talk to you again, so now there you go, Kenny.
I know, right? What's up, Kenny? I'm so grateful the way you share your story. You're healing a lot of us in this moment, you know?
Oh, thank
but
you
I
so
have
much.
A gift for you. You have one of my favorite people on your website, and I want to share it with you on your birthday. Because the way you were talking about that Arkansas experience you were having, I knew you might like to go back there. And I think you do every time you read these words. So I'm going to share it with you and the audience. Hello, Universal family. I love you all. I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things I should say. Say them loud and clear for the whole world to hear. I wish you could know what it means to be me. I wish I could live like I'm longing to live. Well, I wish I could be like a bird in the sky. Oh, I'd soar to the sun and look at the sea. Then I'd sing, because I'd know how it feels to be free. Nina Simone. Thank you for bringing that. She is my shero.
Yeah.
All right. So that's your gift, my brother. And there's another trick. Oh, my pleasure. And there's another secret for you. I do the Celestial Moment with Celeste Morgan, and I break down the energy of the day. And the energy of the day, if it's your birthday, happens to be your lesson card for the whole year. So this will be your second gift, Kenny. Okay? So I'm going to get right to it. You don't have to unwrap your gifts. All you have to do is re-listen, brother. We are here for you. So, good afternoon, family. I am Celeste Morgan, and it is my pleasure to bring you Celestial Moments. I come bearing a number gift, and I trust that you will be able to use these tools to embrace whatever is showing up in your life right now. It's Tuesday, September 4th, 2012. Add the date and you get 2025. Add 2025 and the energy of the day equals 9. The qualities of the number 9 are those of leadership, the ability to see clearly, integration, personal integrity, unity, truth, perfection, dissolves ego attachments, and speaks of challenges faced in looking for your own wisdom. The 9th letter of the alphabet is I, and words like intense, incognito, and intention connect us to the divine energy of 9. 9 expresses in tarot as the hermit. The hermit is the way shower through introspection. Once the hermit has learned his sacred lessons, he continues on his path, lighting the way for others he will encounter in the world. The hermit is astrologically connected to Virgo, and Virgo whispers that we are whole and complete, all unto ourselves. 9 also shows up as the butterfly in the medicine cards. The butterfly's gift is transformation. Its metamorphosis inspires us all to embrace change. Crawl today, then fly tomorrow, when you trust the process of life. Now today, for a special treat, we are going to put the spotlight on the links of the medicine cards. Its number is not 9, it's actually 18. But when you add 1 + 8, you get 9. So here we go. Links, you know the secrets so very well, the dream time and the magic, but you'll never tell. May I learn to hold my tongue, observe like the Sphinx, powerful yet silent, the medicine of the Lynx. Lynx medicine is an amazing tool for drawing information you need to you. Messages on your path are not always going to flash on a billboard. We are so hungry for information that we might even search outside ourselves for some type of direction, which only serves to keep us out of balance and ungrounded. The Lynx reminds you to use your ears more than your mouth so you can restore order. What is the universe trying to reveal to you? We can gather that information when we take some tips from the Lynx. It teaches to trust the unfolding of your life with patience, taking the time to make the quiet your friend, gifting ourselves a pause through our reflective work and meditation yields great rewards, and most importantly, access to Lynx power. We are invited to go within or go without. The choice is always yours. So, are you ready to get still and know and trust the messages you receive? Don't force the process. Continue with your spiritual practice. Enjoy your life. The truth is, there are no real secrets, just things we're not really trying to see. Illusions parading as truth until we learn to tap into universal knowledge for ourselves. All will be revealed when we are ready for the healing. The Lynx teaches to take your time, observe a while, and to listen. All is well. And that's the story of 9 told through the Lynx of the medicine cards. I'll see you on Wednesday around 1 for another celestial moment. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Celeste. Thank you so much. I just love how you link it together and the whole thing, and it works with Teresa's question. I appreciate you, my friend. Now
my
get
pleasure.
Back to work.
Yeah.
You are listening to the Ask Life Coach Ade Radio Show. We are here Monday to Thursday, 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern. All shows are archived. We ask you to share the show with your friends right now. Share with your enemy, because you really don't have an enemy. It's just your enemy. And if you have haters, they're not haters. They're just misguided cheerleaders. You know, that's all. They're misguided. They're confused. Then there's really only one of us. So if you have an enemy, you need to do your inner work. You need to get still, as Celeste said. And, Kenny, we have a question for you. And part of the is a lot in the question, so I'm just going to split the question up because I want to sort of walk the journey with you here. Let's go here. The question from Teresa, she said, the first part of the question is, did he ever along his path through the revolving doors think and ponder that maybe there was another way than what he was going through? That's the first part of the question. Was there a time when you thought there's got to be a better way
than this, or did you just get used to the lifestyle?
Okay. Well, see, what happened was every time, and once you read my book, you'll find out, I would love to give Teresa a copy of the book so she can just give you the information, and I will mail her a copy of the book. What happened was, can you handle that, take care of that?
Yeah, sure, definitely.
Okay, now, what happened was this. Each time my grandmother, let's go back to my grandmother. My grandmother gave me this deep love that I experienced from another human being. So that was the connection to love. And then my mother and her wisdom gave me the Bible. She took me to church against my will. And we would go to church, and I learned how to read the Bible and to study the Bible and to try to seek solace from the Bible. So now when I go to jail, when you're laying in those single cells, all you got is a Bible. Because what happened was back in the day, the Quakers and the Puritans, they wanted men to repent of their ways, men and women to repent of their ways, so they left a Bible in the prison. So Bibles was always in a prison cell. And so I would pick the Bible up and I'd start reading because that's all I knew anyway, as a kind of seek solace and comfort and wisdom and guidance, because you really don't want to be in jail. You don't want to be locked away. But my life situation and circumstances were always stronger. So I need to feed myself. So Bible was paramount. But as I kept going in and out of jail, Teresa, I started reading different thinkers, different writers, different spiritual texts and religious texts. And over time, it's like a slow drip of water on a stone. It will make an impression. So this drip of this reading material from these wise teachers and thinkers, Socrates, Plato, and on and on and on, slowly started shifting my mind and pointing me in a different direction. It was over time that this happened, and that I was slowly start saying, well, maybe this isn't the right way for me. I'm 47 years old. I haven't gotten rich. I better look at another way. And it was through meditation and yoga and reading the Bhagavad Gita, you know, reading the Holy Quran and all these different books that I slowly said, maybe I should start praying for a way out. So I started praying for a way out, and of course, what that did, that attracted Gangaji into my life.
Yes, yes. The other part of the question, and you sort of answered it, but it brings up an interesting thought. She said, you know, then you pondered there may be another way out. She said, though you grew up in a place where there wasn't, with the kind of role model you did have, did you come to realize that that those ways were not serving you? But you know, it's like for me when I think about it, I don't know why God designed life the way it did, or he does, or she does, but it's the prison experience, the pimping and the stealing and the lighting of bad chicks is what's got you to where you are. Who knows? Maybe this is what your soul came here to experience. I don't know. I mean, because we can always think of it a different way. Now, before we talk about Gangaji, I want to ask you, once you went through your awakening, if you will, the rebirthing, were you able to meet some of the people that you robbed or pimped and be able to confront them and actually apologize or ask for their forgiveness or anything like that? Were you able to reconcile with some of the people that you harmed?
Yeah, well, okay, so funny. Once Minnesota Bob, who was my mentor, my pimp mentor, I got out of prison finally after so many years, and I had my awakening. And so I was walking down the street, and this guy in his Cadillac pulled up and said, "Get in the car, MF." You know, that's how we talk to each other on the street. You know, so I got in the car. It was Minnesota Bob. I was walking to work. He says, "Man, I'll put a bullet in your head. You know, you my brother's in jail because of you." And he was going on and on about how me and his brother, we was cashing out of checks, and his brother went to jail. And got out, was doing okay, but he was mad because, you know, he was mad at me. And so I said, we were riding for a while, so he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, I'm going to work. And so I'm just sitting looking at this cat and watching him. He's still pimping. He's still hustling. And he's, you know, I'm saying, wow. And so he let me out by 4 or 5, but I got the car, you know, talking all crazy and stuff like that. And so I got out the car and I looked at him. I said, man, that cat is crazy. You know, all the use cocaine, alcohol, whatever, and he still was pimping, and that was the last time I ever saw him. I saw him a couple other times, but I didn't really want to come in contact with him because there was nothing in me that was attracted to that light or to him.
Right.
And there was nothing to him that was attracted, and there was nothing to him that was attracted to me in my life, you know? And so I met Alice, the daughter of my mother, who was really my main, you know, woman on the streets, hoe, whatever, how you want to look at it. You know, she and I, we're friends. We love each other. You know, she asked me to change her name in the book. I changed her name. And we you know, she's still living her life the way she lived her life. We hung out. We talked. We have nice times. She cooked me breakfast and stuff like that. But still, I saw a Clara, you know, we talked and everything. And still, there was this. What happens is when you're reborn or there's a rebirth, you're a new person. You're a new creation. That old mindset, those old friends, that old everything, it's like it doesn't really, there's no Velcro anymore. You know, nothing can stick to you. That doesn't stick. And so I met as many people as possible, and I realized that I'm a new creation.
Mm-hmm.
And they are still in their world, however their world may be. But it's, wow, I'm totally different.
Yeah, so you had that shift, and then the shift, they happened on a deeper level. What about people, because the person I was asking is like people that you robbed. Were you able to meet back with people that you robbed in the past or may have harmed in some way? Did you meet anybody like that and actually meet with them and ask for forgiveness?
Well, okay, now, let me break this down. Jeannie Campbell, you know, made a statement to the pimp world, to the hustling world, and this mantra went through the hustling world. Like, if you wanna make money, go to the bank. If you wanna buy some food, go to Safeway. And so, you know, so once I heard that, I said that makes sense. And so, I robbed banks, I robbed savings and loans. You know, I cash checks to banks. You know, I went there to the Wall Street to get my money. You know, I went to the bank to get my paper. I didn't rob no old lady with $50. I mean, I did a couple of times. I realized she ain't got no money. She ain't got no money. I was like, I'm not gonna mess. So I went to the banks. I went to the system and robbed the system. And the system is what trying to put me, lock me away forever because they realized, oh, this young black guy knows the key to getting rich. We can't let him. You know, have that key, so we got to lock him away because I was going to the banks and asking for my money.
Wow.
You said
you were asking for your money at the bank. I hear that.
Yeah, where's my money? I got so much money due to me. And they said, oh, well, how much you need today? I said, about $10,000. I said, well, do you have an instrument that says you need $10,000? Yeah, here it is. Oh, okay, then, well, of course, that instrument, you got $10,000, Mr. Johnson. Have a nice day. You too, brother.
Let's talk about the 40-year sentence that really started everything up, you know, because I want to fast forward to, you know, you talk in the book about this guy called Pops that really helped you. I mean, there's a lot of people that was helping you, that was teaching you a different way of thinking. But talk about your relationship with Pops, and then we'll talk about how you met Gangaji.
Okay. Well. So, okay. I'm a come up to the. Okay. My vision is this. This is my vision. My vision is that hopefully I can get a movie done, and that maybe some famous actor like Morgan Freeman, Denzel Washington, is dressed up as an old grizzled gray haired con and can sit down and eat and share his wisdom with me about how my life is going to be a life of blessings and. If I just keep following the words. My movie is going to be centered around the relationship with me and Pops because Pops was like the Yoda in Star Wars to me. You follow what I'm saying? So that's how Pops was like this old white con that the universe, it's amazing how God works in our lives, isn't it? Here I am locked up in a federal prison, and here's an old wise man that put that threw in on me, and he sits down, and he's my teacher. It's amazing how God works, even in the worst situation. So Pops comes to my life, and Pops is amazing. And so he knows all the arts and his crafts and the secret everything. And he's sharing his wisdom with me as best as he possibly can just by being in my cell and doing his work. And so he said, why are you reading this book? Why are you doing this here? Why are you doing this? And he's getting me to think outside the box. You know, he's getting me to think about, you know, mathematics, to think about history, to think about mythology, to think symbolically. You know, so and just in our conversation, what he was doing in such a non-threatening, a non-teachable way, just being a friend. So Papa was a spiritual friend to me in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah. I love the statement that you had in your book when Pop said, Kenny, you're listening to what you're thinking. You are not listening to what I'm saying. You are listening to what you're thinking, but not what
I'm saying. That's right. Because he was saying, you're really being present to your thoughts. You're not being present to what's coming, to what I'm saying, what I'm really saying behind the words. See, he was trying to get me to listen to what was coming behind the words and really pay attention to him and drop my thinking. He was trying to get me to let go of my thinking. Listen to this. He was saying, let go of your thinking and become present in this moment. That's all he was saying.
And from that, you started doing meditation and taking it seriously anyway and reading. You read a lot of different books. Now, there's a prophetic dream, but I won't talk about prophetic dream yet. I want to talk about, because, you know, the whole thing about changing. Sometimes, well, change is usually slow. It's gradual. And there was a time you learned about astral projecting, right? What did you do with that when you learned how to astral project?
Well, a friend of mine, I just stumbled upon a book. A friend gave me the book. And I said, you know, we all want to escape. I was in the escape phase at that time. You know, listen, you know, when the book came to me, I was trying to escape, you know, again. Because I had 40 years, and I don't want to do 40 years. I'm 32 years of age. I'm 33. I don't want to do 40 years. I mean, I could be 9 more. I said, no, I want to escape. I'm going to escape out of this. Because I escaped before and was successful. So I said, I'll try to escape again. And so in the process of me of just trying to escape from prison, a physical prison, you know, this guy gave me this book. He says, read this book by astral projection. I started reading the book, and I said, I'm going to practice this stuff. And I would lay down on my bunk and just watch and watch and watch and watch. And I'm waiting for the signs, because the book gave you point-by-point instructions. It says, when your body goes stiff and you become conscious, then say the magic words, you know, wherever you want to go. And so what happened was, once I had this experience that I had projected out of the body, and I looked back at my body, and I saw that my body was still in the bunk, and I was outside the door, because once you astral project, then you become an astral being, you start seeing on another level and experiencing on another level and thinking on another level. So my most pressing thought was, I want to know what Clara's doing. Because that's what I was most attached to. So whatever you're attached to, that's where your attention and your mind and your body go, even in the astral world.
Clara was your girlfriend?
Yeah, she was my everything at that time. And so I get done this year with some other cat. I said, wait a minute, she's at a party having a great time. I said, and she had on that blue silk dress. I'll never forget that. My favorite blue silk dress. And this guy was sitting next to her rubbing her leg. And I was like, and I snapped right back into the body. But that was confirmation that I could do it. And how I confirmed it, I called her the next morning and said, I saw you at a party, blah, 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 blah. And the phone went silent, went dead. And I knew then that I had discovered the key to escaping from prison.
And you told her what dress she was wearing, and she was like, who do you have watching me?
Who do you have watching me? I said, the whole CNI was watching you.
So your body was in jail, but your spirit was free.
Go ahead.
And you went through a lot in prison. You know, you read, you yoga, you learned about astral projecting, but then you do your spiritual practice in prison, but when you come out, you do it a little bit, but then before you know it, you're back drinking again, hanging out with women, chasing women, as you put it.
But you had this prophetic dream. Tell us about this prophetic dream.
Yeah, I had gotten to the point now where I knew that I was too old and I couldn't keep doing this time. And that, they say that once a man or woman start approaching the age of 40, that's a magic number, even in the Bible. Jesus was in the desert for 40 days and 40 nights. Dick Gregory did a fast for 40 days past, and he came up with this new way of healing people. So here I was in my 40s, and I'm headed to my 40s. I said, you know what? I can't keep doing this time. I don't know what, but something got to shift. And so I read a book. If you really want to know how to be free, pray for a guru, pray for a guide, pray for a minister, pray for a shaman, pray for somebody to show you how to be free. So I said, okay, so I started praying. I didn't know Gandhi existed. I didn't know Ramana Maharshi existed. I didn't know Papa. I didn't know anybody existed. All I knew that I existed and I was tired of being in prison. And so I kept praying and praying and praying. And then I had a dream that I would get out of prison, go into back into the world again, you know, start hustling, drinking and all that stuff, come back to prison, and that when I would have this meeting with this white-haired person that would set me free. And I woke up out of that dream the next morning, I wrote it down, and I was still in prison. I said, wait a minute, you mean tell me I'm going to get out of prison and come back to prison? And so I said, that ain't a dream, that's a nightmare.
No, that's right. Dreaming you're out of prison, you're going to come back while you're still in prison.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a nightmare. That ain't a dream. That's not prophetic. But sure enough, it was prophetic because I got out of prison in 1992. I went back in 1993. I met Gandhi in 1994, and I have been free ever since.
And for those of you who want to find out about Gangaji, just a beautiful spiritual teacher. Her website address is gangaji.org. You can find out about her. The videos on there, the teaching is what I call grander spirituality. It's gangaji.org, GANGAJI.org. That's GANGAJI.org. You can find out more about Gangaji. Now, this meeting with Gangaji, I know you said, you know, you went back to prison, you met Gangaji, but still there were things that happened in between where you were back in prison. People, you saw the video, there's something about that white hair that you recognized that, I know that person, but you weren't tying it to the dream. But there was that experience where she had been to the prison and you missed her. What was that like for you? So looking forward to meeting her, and then you found out she was been there and she was gone.
Well, what happened was, see, I came back to prison, and I was still in my, you know, I was still trying to get my head together because I'm back in jail again, and I hadn't, so I'm trying to, you know, get my bearings, like, how am I going to do my time, you know, how am I going to do my time this time, am I going to do AA, NA, am I going to, you know, read the Bible, am I going to play tennis, you know, what am I going to do, how am I going to do my time, you know, because you got to figure it out, you got to figure this out, you know, and so, I said, I'm going to start meditating. I'm going to hang out with the meditators. So I started hanging out with the meditators, and I went to the meeting, and they turned on a video, and I saw this video. Afterwards, I said, wow, she's familiar. And so I started asking questions to the guy. I said, well, you know, who is her? What's going on? And they said, well, she just left last month. I said, what? Yeah, she was here last month. And this was August, and I was trying to have a conversation with them in maybe September. Mm-hmm. Late September. I said, she was here and she gone. And something in my spirit just got depressed. My spirit got depressed because my spirit was trying to get me to come to these meetings earlier, but I was so lost and confused, I couldn't make it. You know, I was still like paralyzed in a way, numb, or in shock. I was back in jail. Mm-hmm. And so I said, oh, man. I said, well, is she coming again? Well, she might. You know, I can invite her and blah, blah, blah. I said, oh, man. I was like really depressed and didn't know why I was depressed. But I was like, God, I want it. And so, you know, as I kept coming to meetings, I got more and more excited because I realized she was coming in April of that next year. And so I said, oh, okay, she's coming in April next year. I can wait. I can hold on. So then once I knew that, I was okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when you did meet her, what did she say to you? What did she say to you that caused you to really have that awakening, that breakthrough that you were searching for years and years and years and years?
Well, when you're talking to a person, now this is deep now, and I stay close to this. When you're talking to a person who's living in the present moment, like Pops was saying, going back to Pops, you know, when you're talking to someone that's living in the present moment, they're transmitting the presence of consciousness, of oneness, of unity, of compassion, of freedom to you, because they're like a channel, a conduit for the spirit to touch your spirit. And so she said, Kenny, you think that you're a black man, you think that you're ex-con, you're none of these things. But the question I asked her, I said, Ganguji, it's my understanding that we have to die, you know, physically, go somewhere and be judged by somebody and then cast into a lake of fire or, you know, whatever, because because of our sins. And unconscious, and she says, Kenny, God's grace is here now. And so when she said that, I relaxed, I let go, and something inside of me just shifted. I thought, oh, okay, cool. She said, you think you're a black man, you think you're S-time, you think you're none of those things.
Mm.
And so I just relaxed, and the question I asked her was the age-old question that most Christians have, is that they're going to die and be judged and cast into a lake of fire. But that's not true. You're being judged every day. You're being cast into a lake of fire every day.
Mm-hmm.
And if the teachings be true, if Jesus died on the cross and our sins have been paid for, there's no need to be cast into hell. So our only choice is to be cast into heaven because he already paid the price. That's what they're saying. So if he paid the price, then I'm already free. And everybody else is. If he paid the price. So she was speaking to. Go ahead.
I love the quote by Ganga G in your book, which he said, you are what you are searching for. Freedom is who you are. You know, it's like we all struggle with. I mean, there are people outside of prison who are in prison, in the prison of their own mind, and you having that experience. Now, let's fast forward. So you had this major transformation. You realized that there's so much here. There was a shift that took place. And how long did it take you before you released from jail to actually now start practicing the spiritual truth outside of prison?
Say it again. Say it again.
I said what? After you met Ganga G, how long did it take you to come out of prison to actually continue the spiritual practice?
Okay.
Because in the past, you would do the spiritual practice in prison, but when you came back out, you kind of did it every now and then. But the shift happened when you met us. So how long did it take you before you came out and then continued the spiritual practice?
Oh, I got out. Okay, I got out in 1997 of February, and I it was 2 years after meeting Ganguji. I mean, I was 2 years and about 3 or 4 months after meeting Ganguji. I got out. When I got out, it was just done. It was just like, it was done. I was like, no longer. Prison was not even an option for me anymore. Going back wasn't even an option. Mm-hmm. It was just like, how do I survive out here? How do I get a job? How do I take care of myself? You know, those were the things that was like, you know, my work, how can I get a job and feed myself?
Mm-hmm.
That was the biggest thing, you know. That was the biggest
thing.
So
when you left and you had that inner shift, what was the first thing you did to keep you? I know you have a foundation, an organization called This Sacred Space. Was that the first thing you started to actually help you stay on the path and stay in the new awareness?
Yes.
So let's talk about the sacred space.
Okay.
What is the this sacred space?
This sacred space is a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to sharing the message that God's grace is here now. Freedom is available to people in any form right now. That's the basic message, basic vision. The inner freedom is here now, available now.
Right.
Remaining with those incarcerated right now.
Say that again?
Remaining with those incarcerated right now. Mainly. That's our main focus right now.
Indeed. There's a question here from, I think this is Teresa again. I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, it is from Teresa. The question is, has your transformation touched any of your family members in a positive life-changing way?
My daughter, daughter who's 45 years of age, me and her talk almost daily. She trusts me as her spiritual advisor, but it took a minute, it took a long time for her to finally relax and trust me. But once she realized that I could talk to her in her language and I could guide her through, the minefield of her mind and to be able to be at peace, now she, my daughter and I are the, oh, my God, that is a true redemption for her and I to have a relationship because she hated me. So she was so mad and so angry with me all those years. And my mother, she's just grateful that I'm out and not in prison. She don't know what happened to me. And she got her own understanding of it. But she's happy that she said, whoever Donna G is, I love her. You know, she never met Donna G, nothing like that. She seen a video of her and everything, but she says she don't understand what Donna G is talking about, but she said, whatever she did to you, I'm happy.
I know that's right. Now, I don't know what you're talking about, your pure being, but whatever it is she did to you, whatever juice you drank, I'm grateful that you're out. That's funny.
Right.
So here's another part of the question. And was your grandmother able to witness the transformation?
No.
Would you have wanted her to see you as you are now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. We would have so much fun. Oh, my God. Yes. Oh, man.
If she was around today, what would you tell her about your life, what you've learned, and where you are now?
I would tell Grandma, thank you for the love. Thank you for that basic experience of love that you shared with me when I really needed it as a young man, because that love that you shared with me at that time was not diluted. As a matter of fact, that love carried me all through the polluted aspects of my life until the moment I could make me Ganga G and experience that love again in another person, because it was her love that got me all the way to Ganga G. Or got it gone to you to me.
Yes. And then there was an inner quest for you too now. There was an inner quest where it's still the same, but there was something about you, even though you were going in and out of jail, there was something you wanted a better way. You kept reading, you kept listening. You were choosing people you were hanging out in prison. And I kind of look at that because, when you were hanging out with the girls in the neighborhood, you wanted to fit in, you wanted to impress them, and that's when you stole the first coin out of your grandmother's purse. But there was always something inside of you. When you moved to a new neighborhood and you saw the kids whose parents are doctors and lawyers, you said in your book you talk about how you just look out the window and look at how they dress and imagine yourself dressing like that, looking that smart, looking that clean. So it seems to me that there's always been, I don't know if it's willpower, but there's always been something, a deep conviction for what you want. So really, you've been able to go after what you want. You've demonstrated that whatever you want, if you set the intention and just focus on it, you will achieve it, because you've clearly done that. There's a question here. How do we create sacred spaces for people, for ourselves, regardless of where we live? You know, there are people who are living in the community that they think, underprivileged, or that their parents are poor, they're struggling to eat. How do we create a sacred space for one another and individually?
This is real simple. because I do it every day. And I mean, not every day, but every time I go into the county jail with the women, I was in county jail with the women yesterday. And all right, how do I create a sacred space? I just sat down with them, said, "How you doing? Let's be quiet. Let's meditate about 5 minutes or so, because they can't handle too much meditation. We meditate about 5 minutes, and then we just had a conversation. I didn't tell them they were wrong. I didn't tell them to find the Lord. I didn't tell them to go to Allah. I didn't tell them to chase after Buddha. You know, I just simply told them that let's just talk here, and told them how I felt about them. I said, I think about y'all every day. I wake up thinking about you. I walk around all day long thinking about you. I can't wait to come see you all and just sit here and talk to you. So what you're doing, and this is psychotherapists and psychologists and books, all of us, I just accept them as they are and love them as they are, and they're seeing total acceptance, like Grandma loved me as she was, and I saw this love, see this love, and this love will take care of it. You don't have to do anything but just be a vessel of love. That's all. This is real simple. And people would hear it, they would feel it, and they would change. That's what Godology did to me. She came in as a vessel of love and says, "Kenny, you are God's grace. You are God. You are a child of God. So you need to be loved and respected as a child of God." So that's what I do when I go into jail. I don't try to say, "Hey, let go. You know, hey, you know, say five Hail Marys." I don't do any of that. I just sit down and just have a conversation. And as I'm having this conversation, I'm just loving them. As they are.
Let's listen to just a couple more questions here.
Okay.
What about young people right now who sometimes feel, because of where they grew up, how they grew up, and they feel like going to prison is how they're going to get their respect, because they feel a sort of their self-worth is so low that they feel like going to prison is the way for them to get their respect or to really show how bad or tough they are. How would you work with young people, young girls, young boys, to actually get them to understand this thing called love, especially when they're young? I don't think they're not really trying to understand this love thing, because they think love is just about romance. Or actually, not even romance. It's about sex, period.
Right,
how do you work with them?
Well, again, it's back to accepting them and being there and being honest and being open. Because what happens in this magical divine conversation that we're having, you're transmitting, you're just opening your heart and you're transmitting something that can't be experienced with the natural mind, but experienced with the spiritual mind. Now, and young kids are going to have their trajectory. They're going to do what they're going to do because they're discovering the world. So they may go to jail, they may go wherever. I don't know what they may do anything, but they need to see love shared or modeled by an adult that's not chastising them, that's not criticizing, just loving them. I have found the most successful teachers are the ones that are kind-hearted people, kind-hearted men and women, because their kindness is transmitted to them. And they say, that's what kindness looks like. That's what love looks like or feels like. So just being a loving human being. It's real simple. You don't have to go to college for it. You don't have to become an engineer or a rocket scientist. Just be a loving human being, and that love would be experienced by this other person on a deeper level.
So let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
What have you learned? What is one thing you've learned about life?
To be honest with yourself.
Just
be honest with yourself. That's it. You don't have to be honest with you don't have to be honest with nobody else, but be honest with yourself.
You talk in your book about the grace of God. What is grace to you?
The grace of God is this moment that we're experiencing right now, and the fact that I'm able at 64 years of age, after all that crazy and that madness, to be here and have a conversation with you about grace. This is the grace of God, to be able to have this, because I was not trying to have this conversation with you. I was trying to do everything I can in my natural mind to bury myself in prison. But the grace of God came into my life, said, no, I got something else I want you to do. But this is the grace right here, this moment right here. This is the grace of God.
Right here. What do you know for sure? What do you know for sure?
Nothing.
I love it. Thank you. That's a good note to release the show. Oh, my God. Kenny, thank you for your work. And anything you want to share with the listeners before you go, maybe something you want to talk about that I haven't asked you, or anything on your heart that you want to leave with
I would love people. I would love people to go to our website, www.thissacredspace.org, and to see what we're doing for us, the work that we're doing for us, work for those incarcerated, and see how you can support the work that we're doing. That's all.
Right. And on your website as well, it also has is there a page where people can donate your book to people in the prison system?
Yes.
People to read your story?
They go there and they go to PayPal or write a check or whatever, how they want to do it, and they say, mm-hmm. We would love for this book to go. We'd love to support the program where you can send books to those incarcerated. I gave 56 books away last week to those women in the county jail. And they asked me 1,000 questions. I got to do a report on all the different questions they outlined in the book. Like, what about this? What about that? So I got homework to do before I go back to the jail next week. So I would love people to go there and just donate to the site and donate to the work that we're doing to keep. So I wouldn't be able to have office space for women to come out for the reentry center. They come, we can still have sacred space outside of prison. So that's where I'm at right now. You know, working mainly with the women in the county jail number 2 in San Francisco. My heart is just bursting wide open. You know, I can't wait to see him next Monday. I can't wait to see him. I live for my Mondays now. That's what I do. I live from Monday to Monday to see the women in the county jail and sit down and just have a conversation. I said this morning, it's like sitting in the living room of the county jail and just having a cup of tea.
My brother, I am so grateful for you. I'm so thankful. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. And for telling your story. And the book is The Last Hustle, A True Story by Kenny Johnson. And just pick it up. And I even like the name of your publishers, Non-Duality Press. I think that's just cute. That's just awesome, Non-Duality Press. Thank you, Kenny Johnson. I appreciate you. Thank you for making time and creating a sacred space to share with us.
No problem.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Life is good. It's getting better. What a story. I mean, it's funny. I was trying to read just complete the book. I have so many questions in my mind about the book, but listening to Kenny, I had other thoughts. And I thought going back, okay, should I ask about that? But there's so much in this book that, you know, we don't even have enough time. And I trust that, you know, even if it's not a movie, maybe a documentary about his life, because Kenny's story is a story of redemption, you know, and that those of us that are going through all kind of challenges, all kind of situations right now. And some of us can say, well, I didn't rob anybody. Why is my life like this? But it really doesn't matter. For me, what I get out of Kenny's story is whatever you are going through, if you could just, you know, just set the intention to just be free, that inner freedom, to experience the freedom that you are. Like Kenny was saying, we talk about it on all the show, experiencing love in a whole new way. You know, challenging yourself to say, maybe I don't really understand what it means, what love means. Maybe I really don't know. God, give me a new understanding. Give me an understanding. I asked Kenny, what do you know for sure? Oh, my, I felt chills go through my body. I was waiting for this. Well, it was, but I was still waiting for a statement that's going to make me go, whoa. My brother took a breath and said, nothing. Because it's true. What do we really know for sure? And you may say you know something for sure, so be it. But to be in a place of emptiness, to be in a place of groundedness, to be at a place of zero, of just openness, and say, you know what, I'm an empty vessel. Because every day is a new day. But whatever you're using, whatever you're doing, whatever you're practicing, continue to create a sacred space. And to find out more about Kenny's work, as he said, the website address once again is this sacredspace.org, and there's some videos on YouTube about Kenny as well. But just a powerful story. I remember I saw his story on YouTube maybe about 3 weeks ago. I said to Celeste, I want him. let's interview him. And for me, it's really this, the reason I brought him on and said, let us get him, for us to just know that no matter what we're going through, especially if you listen to this conversation, you know, if you listen to this conversation, there's something in you saying there is another way. Don't give up. Keep doing what you're doing. Take a moment to be still. And one of the things Kenny does, and I think from the book, he's still doing it, meditation. Just really getting still, practicing the one-pointed concentration, just being still, because in the stillness, you meet God. In the stillness, you meet yourself. In the stillness, you're free, and you know that you are one with the one, the all thing and the no thing. I love you. I bless you. I appreciate you. And I thank God for you. Whew. This thing called life, it's time to release the show. And I thank you all for being here. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern. I'm just so full. I'm so full. You know, be love. It's the essence of who you are. Be true to yourself. And allow the love to flow in and through you. Beloved, I thank all of you that are listening live, those of you listening on the phone line, those of you sharing the show with your friends, and those of you listening to the archive. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Life Conversations Radio is about helping you be the change you want to see. And no matter what you're going through and growing through, know that we all fall down and you will get back up again. We'll be back tomorrow. The shows are archived. iTunes is where you can find us. Life Conversations. Subscribe and download the show. This is State of Man. We Fall Down. And their website address is stateofmanmusic.com. I love you and I thank you for being part of this conversation. I'll be back tomorrow. This is State of Man. We all fall down. Peace and blessings.
I've made my own mistakes. I lost faith in tomorrow. I even lost my way. Then I learned forgiveness starts with me. I put my burden down and set my spirit free. Holding yourself.
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.